On episode 100 of the InsurTech Geek podcast, talking about building global bridges for the InsurTech community in Israel with Kobi Bendelak from InsurTech Israel. The InsurTech Geek podcast, powered by JB Knowledge, is all about technology that's transforming and disrupting the insurance world. We'll be interviewing guests and doing deep dives into technology that we see changing the industry. We're taking you on a journey through insurance tech, so enjoy the ride and geek out. Rob Galbraith, how are you doing? Good to see you on the show.
Hey, James, it's great to be with you. I'm super excited for today's episode, our guest, our 100th episode, and it just so happens the day we're recording is my son's 18th birthday. It's hard to believe, so he's a man now.
What? Well, wow. I'm gonna be excited about 18th birthday. He's a little man. I call that boys who can shave at 18, but he's starting to figure things out. But episode 100 of the podcast too, man. We've been at this for a little while, brother.
Absolutely, huge milestone for us.
Yeah, it's been fun. And with us from Israel, Kobi Bendelak. Kobi, how are you doing?
I'm fine. Great to be here. Thank you for having me on your 100th episode. It's a present.
You know, it turns out when you do something long enough, the numbers add up. Just sheer force of will and persistence, as are most things in business. And you know that as a multi-decade business owner, Kobi, it's sometimes it's just being too stubborn to quit.
Yes. Yes, you're right.
And so we're glad to have you on. Glad to talk about InsurTech, InsurTech in Israel. You know, happy birthday to Rob's son. 18, man, big 18. I remember when I turned 18. That was exciting. I turned 18 in London. If I remember correctly. It was the summer after I graduated high school, and had a great little trip around Europe with my dad and a school that we went with. I'll never forget that. So I always having a summer birthday. I always was in different places. I was in like a different country every summer, you know, turning some birthday, doing, I did a bunch of exchange programs. And so I always looked forward to that. And it's exciting. 18.
You know what's, James, you know what's happened in the 18th birthdays in Israel? So the boys and the girls went to the army service.
yeah.
a little bit different for 3 years.
Absolutely.
You're like, happy 18th, time to put on your uniform and shave all your hair and lose your identity for 2 years. Yeah, it's unique. You guys have a mandatory public service component of your society, mm-hmm. which I think is pretty cool. I went to a military college at in Texas called Texas A&M, and I was a Navy midshipman for 4 years. I did not commission, but I did 4 years as a cadet in college and enjoyed the military training.
Great.
And one of my best friends from that time, a buddy of mine, Colin Kurenick, just retired out of the Navy after 20 years as a lieutenant commander in Navy intelligence. And so big shout out to my buddy, Colin. But back to you, Kobi. Let's talk about you for a second, because speaking of military service, you retired from the Israeli Defense Forces as a colonel, which is a high-ranking officer. Mm-hmm. You also built a business because you were a reserve officer. And for those that are listening don't know what reserves are, you in the United States, it means 2 weeks a year and 1 week in a month. And Kobi, you said in Israel, it means like 60 to 90 days a year you're actively serving. Is that correct?
That's correct. It depends on your rule and your rank, but this is the average.
Yeah, which is pretty heavy service. Reservists here, I think, might have a harder time with that. Obviously, they get called up to serve, though, and when they called up for tours, it'll be 6 months at a time for a tour if they get activated. So it's a little bit different. But tell me where you grew up in Israel and you know, what your big dream was, what you wanted to do when you were a kid.
That's a great question. I born in the north of Israel, in a village somewhere not far from the border between Israel and Lebanon and Syria. It's a nice place. It's called the Galilee. Green place. Actually, I don't remember a lot what I thought to be when I was 18 years old, but I'm sure that I didn't dream even to be an insurance guy.
You weren't sitting around at 16 and planning on like how you were going to write quotes and bind policies and go. That wasn't your dream as a 16-year-old?
not at all. Not at all. I thought about my army career. I think this is what I thought about. But anyway, not as an insurance and not an insurance tech, of course. But it's nice to see how the life is lead you to places.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you went to university. What did you study in school?
I have the second degree MBA in law,
which is obviously a really, really, really good prerequisite for insurance, considering the entire industry hinges on contracts, right? I mean, that's that ended up working out pretty well.
That's right. Actually, I learned that after my long service, so I were 40 years old when I started learning in university. It's really it's not a regular way for a regular person that it, but this is what I did. So after the army service, I just went to be an insurance guy. I didn't find a way, and I didn't have the budget to learn the university until 40 years old.
Wow! So tell me, what got you into insurance? What was it about someone who's in the army and serving Israeli Defense Forces that led you to want to join insurance?
It's a very nice story, because I like the army, I like the service, but it was after 10 years of being in the army, I decided that I want to have the feeling how to be a regular civil citizen. So I decided to quit for a short time, period of time, from the army and look for new jobs. And, you know, in that times in Israel, when you want to look for a new job, you open the newspaper. So I opened the newspapers. And I found a lot of advertising about being an agent. It looks interesting. So I just went to some interview and then decided to start working as an agent. In that time, it was very easy to be agent in Israel, insurance agent in Israel. So I just got the license very fast. And I started working as a broker, insurance broker. That's the way that my career started, from being in an army officer and to be an agent, insurance agent, very quick.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that a newspaper steered your entire life calling, but that's the way it often is with so many of us. I mean, I had no concept of insurance being an area that I wanted to work in until I started building software, and I found out how many technology problems there were in insurance in 2004 when I landed my first insurance client, and then it became an 18-year deal, and I'm in my 18th year building software for insurance companies. So it's certainly something similar. A friend told me about it, connected me, and here we all are today talking about insurance.
Yeah.
So you were an agent for a long time. What were what were the main lines? I mean, decades as an agent, right? I mean, I think you said 30 years or something.
22 years.
Yeah, 22 years as an agent. So 22 years writing insurance. What were the major lines that you wrote?
Okay, so my agency was particularly focused on special risk. It means cyber insurance, clinical trials insurance, DNO, error and omission. This is what made my company so unique and very successful, because in that time, the Israeli industry, the high-tech industry was bubbling, and like today. But so it's increased my incomes, and my company get bigger and bigger. And in the end of the period of the time that before I sold the company, we was something like the first and the second and the first biggest insurance agency in Israel. We had almost 1 billion shekels premium. So it's $300 million. So it was a big company. And someday I got a phone call from my competitor that he wants to buy the company. Suddenly, yeah. one day I got a call, you know, it's a dream that, something that you'd never dream on, and he wants you to buy the company.
Yeah, because he wanted it. I mean, at 300, I mean, that's an incredible book. I mean, that's a lot of premium
That's right. That's right.
And so, and that's especially considering the market size of Israel too. I mean, mm-hmm. you're a major player there. One of your competitor calls you and he says, "Hey, I want to buy your company." How'd that process go?
No, he did it in a different way. First, I really hit him. I didn't like him at all. So he knew that if he will approach me directly, I will never say yes, even for the phone call. He's a smart guy. So what he did, he took someone from EY, some partner from EY, and the partner called me and said, "There is someone that wants to buy the company. It's interesting you." I told him, I was so curious to know who wants to buy the company. So I told him, yes, let's admit. So who wants to buy the company? And he was smart. He didn't want to tell me until our third meeting who is the guy. So after that, I said, oh my gosh, he wants to buy the company. but the check was too big to say yes. So this is what I said. It came in the right time because I was 45 years old, and it's good time to start new part of your life. I got enough money for all my life and for my kids, so it's fantastic. So I decided to say yes. I've told him that I have three things that I want to be sure. One is that he will give me all the money in one check. I don't want to be a lean on his success. The second is that I will not give any other services after the sign on the agreement. And the last one, that he will keep all my employees for 12 months. He will not fire any one of them because they were part of my life. So he said yes, and we signed on the agreement.
Nice. Yeah. And so obviously those type of transactions are typically life-changing. Yes. So after that happened, did you have a crisis of what do I do now, or did you jump straight into being an investor, board member, advisor?
No.
What was the transition?
The first thing is so nice that your phone is not ringing. It's not ringing anymore. Nobody called you. It's fantastic. It's quality of time, but. So I tried to make all my dreams came through. So I went to the Himalaya, to the Everest, to the Maldives. You know, all the Africa, all these great places. Took my kids, to my wife, have fun. But after 5 months, I realized that it's too boring, not to be in charge of something. So I decided to open my heart to new adventures, and I knew that something will happen. So after a while, I got an email written in the subject, InsurTech Meetup. I was an agent. I didn't know what is Meetup.
No, you're like what is that meetup? Is that when you meet up at someone's office and sell them insurance?
Yes. Really. I didn't know, but I was so boring. So I went there, and it was amazing because I met a very nice startups pitching about my previous industry. How they are going to change it, how they're going to disrupt it. And I said, wow, this is interesting. This is my new adventure. So I decided to open InsurTech Israel. This is how it's happened. It's suddenly somewhere, it's like most of my great things that happened to me all my life. Nothing is planned.
Yeah. Very, very cool. And so today, let's fast forward all the way to today. What is InsurTech Israel? I mean, you said in the introduction, we talked about it, building bridges from the the world to the InsurTech community in Israel. But what is it? What are you doing there? Also, since you co-list InsurTech Israel on your LinkedIn along with the Israeli InsurTech Accelerator, why don't you tell us about InsurTech Israel and the Israeli InsurTech Accelerator?
Okay, great. So we InsurTech Israel have four pillars. The first one is investment. So until today, we invested in 14 startups. The second pillar is biz dev activity. We assist Israeli InsurTech startups to definite their product, to focus on the insurance industry, make them operate well in the insurance industry. It's a new culture. It's other culture for them. Most of them are entrepreneurs and technology guys that don't have any knowledge about insurance. So this is what we are doing, assist them in the business biz dev pillar. The third one is media. We call it media activity. It's including delegations to all the big conferences around the world, roadshows that we operate in US and Europe, roundtables, conferences, all this stuff. So it's a great tool for our startup to expose themselves to brokers, insurance companies, and investors. And the last pillar is our accelerator program that we opened here in Israel 2 years ago, together with great global partners like Dell Technology, Microsoft, the Sompo Insurance, Lloyd's of London, AIG, Aon, Sapiens, Milliman, Deloitte. Sorry for all my partners that I didn't mention my name, but great coalition of global partners. So we operate here two cohorts per year, and it's a very unique and boutique accelerator program. We recruit five to seven startup each cohort, and by providing them a great mentorship program together with a lot of workshops all over the world and roadshows that we operate for them during the 10 weeks of the program, we assist them to accelerate them activity in the insurance world. The cohorts and the program is very successful. Our startup raised more than $100 million during the last 18 months and signed on more than 25 agreements. So it's a very successful opportunity to our startups. All that made us really connected here in the Israeli InsurTech ecosystem. We have almost 200 InsurTech startups and we're really connected. And because of that, we are, as you mentioned, a bridge for the startup abroad and for all our friends around the world, insurance companies, brokers, and investors, as a bridge for them to the Israeli InsurTech ecosystem.
That's awesome. Well, thanks for the explanation. I appreciate it. Rob?
Kobe, it's so great to have you on, my friend. We've known each other now for a few years, actually had the opportunity to meet and Istanbul for the first time a few years back, and yes. Just congratulations on all your success to date. So I'm going to ask you, this is a tough question because I know you're literally all over the world and each week is different, but just kind of, you know, pull back the curtain a little bit for our audience. What are some of the big activities that take up your time during a typical week? And I'm curious, not just about your business week and what you do, but also I know a little bit about your weekend activities. And so I would love you to share a little bit of light on what you like to do for fun in your spare time.
Okay, you got you. Catch me, guy, Rob. Okay, so part of my time is related to other activity, not connected to insurtech industry. I'm a Polaris guy. Polaris is a big American car manufacturer, UTV, ATVs, vehicles. So what I'm doing there, I'm an off-road manager for them around the world, doing a lot of tours, a lot of test drive and things around. So I'm doing that in Israel and, of course, abroad, especially in U.S. I really like the U.S. Deserts like the Mojave Deserts and all this stuff. So I'm really happy about this adventure. So it's take let's say 25% for my time driving on that vehicles with great people. It's fantastic because you're arriving to places around the world. Let's say there's a ranch in the middle of Utah, 200 miles far from each other location, and you find people like you that like this this habit or this experience, and it's fantastic. So it's connect people, and it's a pleasant time. So this is what I'm doing 25% for my time, driving on the Polaris vehicles, and the rest of the time I'm focusing on promote as an evangelist for the Israeli InsurTech ecosystem.
That's great. So look, I'm not sure how you've squirreled away that much time to go around and tour deserts, but it sounds amazing. And it sounds like something I would really enjoy doing. So good on you for figuring out how to run that, because it sounds really exciting. I too really enjoy the American West and the deserts that we have. I've been to some desert territories down in South America and in Northern Argentina and Southern Bolivia, and they're pretty amazing down there too. And salt flats. There's a lot of really cool places to go see in the world. And when you've got outdoor activities, you know, it's a lot of fun can be had there. Let's just jump in on InsurTech Israel and the community of companies that are there. Of all the things you're looking at, of all the things you're investing in, you don't have to specify individual companies. Maybe we just keep it at the topic level, but what major investment thesis or what major change in insurance are you most excited about? Is it you know, automation for agents? Is it streamlined underwriting? Is it parametric insurance? Walk me through what's really geeking you out that you're excited about that you're seeing on a regular basis or you're seeing come through your pipeline there at InsurTech Israel?
This is the first time that someone asked me that question without asking me to promote or say something about one of my startup, because it's very complicated for me because all of them are like my kids. So I can't say some names I don't want to make a misunderstanding or unpleasant time. So thank you for asking this question. That question is in another way. I think what really make us very interesting is the AI that they develop here, coming from the intelligent unit. It's a great tool for the insurance industry. It's not just AI with data. It's something very, it's very big, because it's taking the insurance tech to the next generation, next level. I think until the last year, the insurtech, we can say that the insurtech industry was insurtech 1.0 generation. So probably most of the technology was focusing on digitize the insurance industry, index the data and digitize the insurance industry. And now you can see a lot of technology coming to the insurtech and the insurance areas that take the data, take the information and make the insurance even be better. And that's very wide, because it's related to underwriting, it's related to services, it's related to claims, it's related to a lot of great things. So I think what's the most exciting is all the technology that coming from the army, the Israeli army and intelligent unit that implement in civil technologies, solve big problem and changing the insurance world. So in the coming years, you will see a lot of good things that coming from that.
Yeah, the United States is no stranger to defense commercialization.
That's right.
The Department of Defense and our space program has certainly been a major incubator for new ideas and new case studies. And there's been, you know, hundreds of critical technologies that have commercialized out of our military and our space program. And so certainly we're no stranger to that. And it's I agree with you. And you know, the last, you know, 3 or 4 weeks have been big weeks for AI, as the general population has started to use generative text tools and generative design and generative image tools like ChatGPT and some of the imaging tools that allow you to upload photos and really generate any image of anything that you want, which is scary for professional graphic designers when someone can just go in and upload a photo and say, give me five pictures or something like this. But there's a lot of really good applications that we're seeing leveraged in InsurTech, and it sounds like you are as well. Rob, what you got?
So Kobe, we've had several entrepreneurs from Israel on past episodes of the InsurTech Geek podcast. And I think the word has certainly gotten out there in terms of just the unique mix of culture, the technical skills from the service and the IDF, et cetera. But just from your perspective, you know, what would you say to anyone that may not be familiar with the Israeli InsurTech ecosystem? What makes you guys so special, and why should folks look to Israeli entrepreneurs for solutions to any challenges they may be facing?
So first, it's what makes Israel so startup nation and so popular in the insurtech scene. It's based on something, some basic infrastructure. So first, we have a great education and great infrastructure to be entrepreneur. It's easier to be entrepreneur in Israel than the other places around the world. Maybe you can just take out US. It's very easy. It's not very easy, but it's easier. There is a lot of money here. There's a lot of global technology company here. There is the army, of course, and universities and the support from the government. So it's easier to be entrepreneur. Based on that, it's a culture. You know, there is a joke that's saying that the Jewish mom in the previous time wanted her son or daughter will be a lawyer or doctor. Now she wants that her son or daughter will be an entrepreneur. So it's a culture. You know, it's a culture. The third issue is that we are living in a very tough neighborhood. We need to be independent. We need to be entrepreneurship. So it's kind of living here in Israel. So this is from the area, from the area around. For the insurtechs, I think there is a two reason that we are so successful. First, I think that insurtech is not technology. It's not just technology. Actually, it's more brings solution for big problems, and then implement technology to solve it. And we are really good with that. Israelis. The second thing is that we have a great success story, and success story attract the entrepreneurs. They want to be a success story themselves. We have Lemonade, and we have Next Insurance, and we have Hippo, and we have Aeronix, and we have Sapiens, and we have many more great companies and a very successful one. And not a lot of people know that all these names came from Israel, from our ecosystem. So it attract entrepreneur to join and to bring great entrepreneurs to join the ecosystem and grow it. So I think this is the reason that Tel Aviv is one of the insurtech capital of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think definitely people forget how many companies come from Israel. And whenever I meet Israelis, I start recounting all the Israeli companies I've had on my podcasts over the years and all the innovation that's occurred. And they're always pleasantly surprised that I'm actually aware of the commercialization efforts there and what goes on. So I think that's good to remember. On that note, I'm going to close out with this question, because you ran a profitable business in your agency, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And you sold your profitable company because it generated this thing called cash. In your case, it was cash shekels. In our case, it's cash dollars. At what point do insurtech companies have to start generating a profit and proving they can be sustainable economically?
From the beginning, from day one.
Okay.
From day one.
Then why isn't that happening, right? Because you have a lot of insurtech companies that even at large scale, and you mentioned one, Lemonade, that are still losing vast sums of money. At what point do they have to prove they can be profitable?
But they could. The reason that because they could raise money. It was easy. So they raised money. Mm-hmm. They're smart people. It's better to have the money in them bank account. I mean, the company, the startup bank account, not the private people.
Yeah.
So it was easy. They could. So this is the reason that we raise a lot of money in big valuation. But if you want to build a great company, you need to be profitable. And if you are not profitable, you need to understand why and when. Probably it's you need to invest a lot of money to develop your technology. But after that, you need to bring money. So and right now, and that's starting to be a tough time for the technology industry. You will see that the goods will survive, and the goods will get the company that will bring profit.
Yeah, you're definitely seeing tech companies right sizing and bringing staff back in line with their revenue, so that their outgo doesn't exceed their income. I'm just, I keep looking at earnings reports and keep looking at public company earnings reports and wondering at what point will the stock prices go to zero or go under a dollar if the companies can't prove that they can generate a profit, because there's a difference between saying that you could be profitable and then becoming profitable, right?
That's right.
And so that's something I've been thinking about a lot. Certainly I'm a bootstrapper myself. And believe in building profitable, financially sustainable businesses. And so it's something where I'm excited for them to prove that they can, because I'm rooting for them. I'm excited for them. I want them to stay around, and I want them to continue to disrupt things like the customer experience and underwriting and policy and claims and, embedded insurance, parametric insurance, or, Internet of Things. There's a lot of areas they're pushing on that are really exciting. But if at the end of the day, if the companies that graduate from the Israeli insurtech ecosystem, the United States insurtech ecosystem, I'm in a country within a country called Texas. And so, the Texas tech ecosystem, if our companies don't graduate and then actually grow up and make money, then it's kind of all for naught at the end of the day. It just takes a long time to watch that maturity happen. And so I think I'd just be curious to, see where that goes. Any further thoughts on InsurTech and its future from a financial sustainability and profitability perspective?
Yes, I have. I think there is InsurTech there is two layers or two paths. One is the B2B and one is the B2C. There are different approach, different go to market. It's even different mindset, but then both. And under the name of InsurTech. So until the last year, I think most investors feel very comfortable to invest a lot of money in the B2C startups, because it's easier for them to understand how these startups are going to operate. It's easy for them to understand. And this is what make them valuation so high. It was embarrassing even to see that, because it was easy to the investor, but we didn't see the B2B startups. And I always say that if you want to invest good money in good company and get good returns, invest in the B2B startup. It's a long scale for bring money, and the sales process is very long, but in the end, they will have a big opportunity to sell. There's the insurance market is huge. So if you are successful startups or B2B insurtech startups, you will be profitable faster and you will be worth a lot of money. And now I see the changes that's happening. And one more thing, the B2C startups realize that they cannot sell insurance product without agents and brokers. It's very, very, very complicated to sell it because
they learn that the hard way.
Yes, 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 that's right. The hard way. They can't because insurance product is a push product. I was an agent. I know that. It's a push product. There is no one coming and wake up in the morning say to his wife, I want to buy two policy today. let's have fun. There is no one, and if yes, is crazy or something happened to him. So it's a push product. Someone need to push the clients to buy it. And the B2C startup realized that. I see a lot of my startup using our connection with BrokerTech Ventures in US and a lot of brokers in other regions to start engage with the brokers to start sell them product by the technology that they developed. It's a huge movement. It's fascinating.
Yeah, awesome. Well, Rob, we're about out of time. Any final comments or questions?
Yeah, I just so thrilled to have you on our program, Kobe. It's been so wonderful to get to know you over the years. And I'm just blown away by the success that you've had at InsurTech Israel. I know you said you've been here in the States 5 times. I told you on LinkedIn, I see you. Feels like you're all over the world. And obviously that's part of your role. And so you've just been a tireless advocate for the Israeli startup community, for InsurTech Israel. I know you've had tons of success and will continue to have success. So just curious, if folks want to find out more on InsurTech Israel, where's the best place they can find that info?
Thank you. They can find us on LinkedIn and of course in our website. And I want to say thank you for having me here and happy and Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah for everyone.
Absolutely. Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah to you as well. And I'll always love having guests from Israel on. It's good to hear about all the great innovation, a very small geographic space that has a outsized impact on the world of technology and insurance. And so it's always good having you on. Again, this has been the InsurTech Geek podcast powered by JB Knowledge, jbknowledge.com. It's all about technology that's transforming and disrupting the insurance world. I've been your host, James Benham. That's jamesbenham.com with co-host Rob Galbraith at endofinsurance.com. Thanks to Jim Greenlee, our podcast producer, Kara Daltonaro, our creative producer, and thank you for joining us today. Look forward to talking with you soon. We're taking you on a journey through insurance tech, so enjoy the ride and geek out.